Come here, Bobby. I want to tell you a little story. Come jump up on my knee. Oh, you got big. You got big. I want to tell you a little story, Bobby. Once upon a time, there was a bully oligarch named Donald Trump. One day, Donald wanted to build a wall with a lot of money. And he started making up lies about it and stuff like that. He was a horrible, horrible man. He wanted to shut down the government so the people wouldn't get paid. I know. And he was proud of it. He had no feelings whatsoever. Blood was replaced by stones and ice in his veins. The Democrats said, let's just fund money to open up the government and then we can talk about your stupid little wall. But Donald said no, because he was a bully who had no heart. He said no. He said no. He said no.
I am proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck, because the people of this country don't want criminals and people that have lots of problems and drugs pouring into our country. So I will take the mantle. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it. The last time you shut it down, it didn't work. I will take the mantle of shutting down.
That is
and I'm
going to
shut it down for border security.
But we believe you shouldn't
okay.
shut it down.
But Thank you very much, everybody.
Democrats said you shouldn't shut it down, but he wanted to. 32 days later, the government is shut down, and many government employees are not being paid, are suffering, can't pay their bills, have to take handouts from people in the neighborhood, because Donald has to make a big point. Today, the Democrats are going to present a bill into Congress that says, let's fund the government and open it up again, and then we can sit down and talk and negotiate. But Donald says, no, it's my wall or nothing. These people won't get paid, and the government will suffer, and the country will suffer, because I need to make a point. Bastard! Little Bobby, don't ever grow up to be president.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here. Thank you so much. Wow, huh? What can I tell you? That was the Ron Van Dam players at the beginning of the program. Talented, dramatic individuals. They know how to put on a show, don't they? So anyway, so I'm watching TV this morning, and this commercial comes on. And at first, I don't know what the commercial is for. Did you ever do that? Did you ever start like watching a commercial, and you're about 30 seconds into it, and you say to yourself, I have no idea what this commercial is for. It's entertaining, but I don't know what they're trying to say. What's their point? And isn't that the idea of the commercial, is to sell somebody something? But if you go through the whole commercial and you don't say what you're selling, didn't you kind of waste a lot of time? And at the end of the commercial, they have the name of the company. I still don't know what you do. I have no idea what you were trying to tell me. It's the worst thing ever. And marketers say, oh no, that's the most effective form of advertising. Oh, it is, huh? The most effective form of advertising is showing me something I have no idea what I'm watching. At the end, put up the name of a company I have no idea what they do. Very effective. Well, Ron, you're talking about it now, aren't you? Yes, but I still don't know what it was. I went to school. They taught me advertising. I went to film and television school. They had a whole course on advertising and getting your point across. Apparently, the people who made this television commercial didn't show up for that class because I have no idea what they were trying to sell me. Yeah. Sir, can I help you? Yes. Can I help you? I can tell you where the items are in the store, or what are you looking for? Can I help you? Yes, I saw this commercial yesterday, and I want to buy whatever they were selling. What was it? I don't know. Well, I can't help you if you don't know what you want to buy. I know. Anyway, so I'm watching this commercial. Here's what happens in the commercial. It's the stupidest commercial I ever saw. The stupidest. This guy comes walking out of his house with his briefcase, walks to his driveway, unlocks his car door, gets into the car, starts up the car, drives out of the driveway. Within about a block, he is in bumper-to-bumper traffic, honking the horn, traffic isn't moving. He gets frustrated. He puts the car in reverse, backs up, goes back to his driveway in reverse, sits in his car, takes out his cell phone, and calls the Lyft people. Now, the Lyft people, this is the ride-sharing Uber-type thing. Calls the Lyft people. You see him dialing the Lyft people. Says Lyft on the cell phone. You can see it in the commercial. Split second later, his car pulls up with a very attractive woman in it. Guy gets into the car, tells her where he wants to go, and all of a sudden, she drives him there. He gets out of the car, and he goes into a meeting, comes out of the meeting, and another Lyft car is waiting for him to take him to lunch. My question through this whole thing is, when you backed out of your driveway, sir, and it was bumper-to-bumper traffic, what makes you think that a Lyft car doesn't sit in traffic also? It's also a car. So what Lyft is trying to tell you, quite stupidly, is if what's the point of going to work in your car in a traffic jam if you can take a Lyft car, pay for it, and sit in the traffic jam? I don't understand the point of that whole thing. What a stupid television commercial that was. I have the Comcast Infinity thing because I'm a schmuck. And one of the features is you can rewind something that you just saw. And I rewound this commercial because I figured, did I miss something here? There's traffic. That's why a guy doesn't want to drive his own car. He calls a Lyft so he can pay to sit in traffic in somebody else's car. Did I miss something? Why? Well, what kind of commercial for Lyft is that? Does a Lyft car not sit in traffic at all? Is it magically avoid traffic? I don't understand the point. So I rewatched the commercial, and it's exactly as I saw it. It makes no sense whatsoever. And that's when I started analyzing myself. The commercial tumbled me into a self-search mode. And here's what it was. I said to myself, Ron, I call myself Ron because otherwise I don't know who I'm talking to. I said, Ron, do other people react to things the way that you do? And I thought, well, I don't know. I don't. Am I different? If someone were watching this Lyft commercial, would they just nothing at all? I don't quite understand. I don't quite understand. Or is it me? Am I oversensitive? Am I overanalytical? Do I belong in therapy or balloon in therapy? No, I don't. Who does then? The Lyft people belong in therapy. What a stupid commercial. That's who belongs in therapy, not me. The Lyft people. The Lyft people. Those people with the Lyft company. Crazy stuff, man. That's intelligence. What happened to intelligence? I think after the 2016 election, intelligence just stopped. It was done. There's no point in being intelligent anymore. It's over. You ever out in public and your underpants start itching?
Listening to The Ron Van Dam Show is like realizing that you put your underwear on backwards this morning. It's wrong, but it doesn't feel bad, and it's not like anyone's ever gonna find out, so just go with it. This is The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
My mother was one of those mothers that told me to always wear clean underpants in case I was in an accident, and I never followed that up. I never turned to her and said, you know, Mom, you're constantly telling me to put on clean underwear, not for hygiene purposes, but in case I'm in an accident. And I never really asked you why you say that. Why would you say that to me? What would happen if I was in an accident and my underpants were dirty? And she never answered it. But then I started Googling. Thank God there's Google, because they answer everything my mother never did. And apparently the idea behind this, you should always wear clean underpants in case you're in an accident, apparently it's because when the paramedics come to extract you from the automobile, God forbid you should have dirty underpants. It would be so embarrassing. They take you to the emergency room, they take your pants off, and for some reason your underpants are dirty, and I guess the paramedics in the hospital would say, I'm not treating this guy. We're not treating this guy. Let him die. His underpants are dirty. Yeah. Flip side of that, quite obviously, is if you were in a horrible accident, that's the time to soil your underpants anyway. So what difference does it make, Mom? That's two things that bother me. The Lyft commercials and the clean underpants story. Those two things make no sense.
Do you know that there is one item that can not only increase your home's beauty, but its value? That would be placemats. Hello, I'm George Karanapikopoulos, owner of George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse, your one stop for all your placemat needs. We have a placemat for every room of your house. That's right, placemats are not just for the dining room anymore. Anywhere you might make a spill, or maybe where you eat, like in front of the TV, I do it all the time like you. You want a placemat. We have fancy placemats, like in bamboo or teak. That's right, teak. Nice plastic laminate ones for no stains, even blue. We can custom make your placemats in as little as 2 weeks. Come to our showroom at the intersection of Route 27 and the Holbrook Turnpike. You're going to like what you see. Your placemat is waiting for you at George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse.
True that. I'm going there today. I am a little low on placemats. Yeah, this is what I suggest you do, and I don't take sides as far as the commercials here are concerned, but there was a situation last Thanksgiving where I was having 8 people at my dining room table for Thanksgiving, and I had cooked a lovely, lovely meal with a turkey and all the accoutrements, the stuffing and the cranberry sauce and the 20 pounds of fat that I was about to gain. All that was ready to go. And went to set the table. Took out the fine silverware, the good dishes, the good china. Why do we call good plates? Why do we call that china? I wonder if in China their good plates are called America.
I don't think so.
So put the plates out and stack them on the side, and I go over to the drawer to get out my placemats, and I only have 7 placemats. Where's that 8th placemat? I can't do this. There are 8 people coming, 8 settings. I only have 7 placemats. What's a guy to do? It was Thanksgiving. Everything was closed. Well, it was an embarrassing Thanksgiving. Through the whole meal, people were looking at me like, what the hell's a placemat? Kind of host are you, Ron? What the hell's a placemat? So I was quite embarrassed. I never lived that down. Well, the next day, because stores open early, you know, the day after Thanksgiving, it's Black or Green Friday or something. I went right to the store and I bought a placemat from the placemat store. Because the placemat store has all kinds of placemats, every kind of design and illustration on the placemat you can ever think of. Found one to match the other seven placemats that I had, and now I have my eight placemats. That's when I decided to take on this advertiser as a commercial that I can be proud of, and I can say, I, Ron Van Dam, use that store to save my placemat life. I well up in tears whenever I think about that story. Because that was so embarrassing. You don't know what it's like. You're probably saying, Ron, you're short one placemat. What's the big deal? It should roll off your back. No, things don't roll off my back. I don't have a rollable backside. Nothing rolls off my back, not even balls. My back is constructed differently than yours. Things don't roll off my back. Things like that are important to me. That can ruin somebody for the rest of their lives. You can be on your deathbed at the age of 110, if you should be so lucky. And the family surrounding you, and they say, are there any last words? My last words would be, damn it, if I only had that last place, Matt, on that Thanksgiving. Yeah, it's a regret I'll never live down. You should have seen the faces of people at that Thanksgiving Day table looking at me like I had failed them. I had literally put a spear through their Thanksgiving Day turkey heart. A couple of people even cried.
How can you do this?
You gotta have everything match on Thanksgiving when you're having people over. That's the measure of a man. No, it doesn't roll off my back, and I will never let it go. It shall live with me forever. These are the lessons in life. When things go wrong and they fail, like having a shortage of placemats, you're supposed to learn from that. It's supposed to be a teachable moment so that never, ever again in your life will you not have the proper number of placemats, even by one, even by one. It's a lesson that I learned, and I apply it to my everyday life. If I had an everyday life, I actually don't. My life is not everyday life. It's not. I don't know what it is, but it's not everyday life. Everyday life is something that just happens every day. Mine doesn't just happen every day. I have to make it happen. If I don't get out of bed, nothing's going to happen. As a matter of fact, the only reason I get out of bed is not to go to the bathroom like most people do. Only reason I get out of bed is if I didn't, I wouldn't get out of bed. That's the only reason. And now it's become like a fanatical thing for me. As soon as I get up, I brush my teeth, I have a cup of coffee, and I go to the dining room and I double check to make sure I have every damn placemat that I need. Because you never know when eight people are going to show up and you're short one placemat. That's never going to happen again. Not in my life. Oh, no.
Gray skies are gonna clear up, put on a happy face. Brush off the clouds and cheer up, put on a happy face. Take off the gloomy mask of tragedy, it's not your style. You look so good that you'll be glad you decided to smile.
Shut up!
All right. Our guest joins us now. Here we go.
Hello, Ron.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Christy Wilson Duck joins us now. And we're talking about her new book, Adventures in Franchise Ownership, which a lot of people would be quite interested in. Everybody's looking for information on being successful, and this kind of points in that category, doesn't it?
Yes, it absolutely does. And that's the primary reason I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
It worked so well for me that I wanted to kind of demystify it.
Yeah, a lot of people through the years have heard that franchise ownership is very interesting because you're already investing in something that has proven to be successful. It's kind of like the business has been actually created for you already.
Yeah, that's sort of the overarching thing about franchising. And internally in the field and in the industry, we say in business, for yourself, but not by yourself. Uh-huh. And so that's not for everybody, but for some of us, you know, it's great, you know, maybe depending on the time in their life or what their interests are, you know, it just depends.
Now,
it's a great business model.
Yeah. Now you have firsthand knowledge of this because, you got into this category and apparently worked very well for you.
Yes, it did. Thanks for asking about that. I found myself, after 15 years in corporate sales, without a job, and realized, and a brand new baby, and realized, wow, okay, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And somebody, a friend, had been whispering about this particular brand for a while, but I wasn't interested. The time wasn't right. But then I built, owned, and operated, as we say, an early childhood academy called Kids Are Kids, and did that for 15 years and then sold or exited and did really well, Ron, and wasn't planning per se that that would be, you know, the final outcome, but because it ended so well and I learned later that, I don't want to say that's unique, but maybe at that level, not common, that I decided to share with others. So it worked great.
Interesting. So you sat down, you wrote the book, trying to help others. If the shoe fits, then to wear the shoe, I suppose. Are there circumstances where you shouldn't be doing this?
Where you shouldn't be getting involved in franchising?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I would say for sure, at least a couple big ones. One is definitely timing, you know, and that would go across for starting any business, but the personal timing in terms of, you know, what your motivation is and what, if you're encumbered with, you know, new house, new babies, and so on. You know, so you have to take a look at that. And then the second thing is, again, entrepreneurial, I mean, independent business owner or franchising, is you definitely, even with franchising, you definitely have to have a strong interest or passion for the segment that you're getting involved in. So that's number two. And then number three, I mean, you've got to look at the local market. You know, does the local market need what you're providing or what you want to provide? And if it's a no, or there's plenty, or you're not bringing anything new in terms of competitive advantage, then you need another market, or perhaps it's, if it's franchising, that's a little bit easier. Perhaps it's a different segment that you need to look at. So I would say all three of those things are really important.
Do you need to have any background in running a company, or is this something that your passion would drive you?
So one reason I wrote the book, Ron, is because a lot of people that enter franchising and independent business ownership, but let's stick with franchising, enter with different backgrounds and different experiences and different levels of education. So I think success comes more easily for those who have experience in business. I think that's numero uno. Education is great, not necessary, but great, and a willingness to be flexible and learn and grow and, you know, look outside of themselves for inspiration. Mm-hmm. For example, one year I read the guy that wrote Who Moved My Cheese, Spencer Johnson. Mm-hmm. He passed away a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I never even read that book, but I read a book called Peaks and Valleys, because every year I tried to, you know, commit to, you know, growth.
Mm-hmm.
And motivation, you know, I got something from that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that honest to God led to me having this whole new outlook on my business, how to control expenses, how to build loyalty. In other words, peaks and valleys are not the way to go.
Right.
You want to smooth out the landscape.
Uh-huh.
And that, at least I don't want peaks and valleys, you know, no thank you. So the four pillars approach is all about that. So I think the shorter answer is, this to me is what this book, The Four Pillars Approach, helps fill in the gap
mm-hmm.
between the owner's manual and, success. So it levels the playing field. So I think for a listener or someone that's remotely considering franchising, even if it's not this year, but it's 4 years from now, they're just curious, this is a good read, because there's all kinds of stories in there, and it's not just my stories, it's, you know, from many right. others as well.
Okay.
In the field. So
perfect. Well, there it is. People can learn a lot from the book, and it's kind of a support thing as well, where you're not going through the experience by yourself. You've got somewhat of a friend and a guide to help you through this, from the person that went through it themselves and knows how to navigate. The book is available everywhere, I assume, at this point.
It is, thank goodness.
Okay.
It's available Amazon, online, Barnes & Noble, Target, and in bookstores, local bookstores. If not, they can certainly get it, but, you know, definitely the Barnes & Noble
sure.
that are out there. And I'm a professor at Rollins College, and it's in our book. It's in our bookstore.
Cool. Well, of course. It better be, otherwise you'll have
too
to go
far
to a different...
For your...
Yes. Well, maybe it's worth the drive.
Yes.
she's Christy Wilson Delk, and it's Adventures in Franchise Ownership. Is there a website that we can visit?
Yeah, sure. That website, Adventures in Franchise Ownership, points to mine, mm-hmm. which is ChristyWilsonDelk.com, or the Four Pillars Approach with an S will point to that. And if anybody just wants a peek at the book and maybe I don't want to buy it,
mm-hmm.
they can download the introduction and chapter one on my website. So that's available.
Perfect. Perfect. Good talking to you, and thank you so much.
Ron, thank you. I really appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. You take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Here you have it, babe. I've often wondered about the alphabet, why there are only a certain number of letters. At what point did somebody say, that's enough letters? We got all we need now. I don't know. And what's with the X and the Z? What's their point? Can't we, like, if you're going to spell knock, K-N-O-C-K, you obviously do not need that K there. It's stupid. Knock should be N-O-C-K. But for some reason, some highfalutin letter person decided, well, let's make it tough. That would be the easy way out, so we could teach our children really easily the alphabet and how to spell. No, I'm going to throw them a wrench. I'm going to screw them up. Let's put a K at the beginning of knock. Why would you do something like that? To screw people up? Wow. You know what we should do? What's that? You really want to screw people up? Sure. Take the letter F and all the sounds that the F makes. Yeah, the letter F. Very simple. We're going to take two other letters, P and H, going to put them together and make them sound like an F. What the hell's wrong with you? What, are you kidding me? That's the stupidest idea I ever heard in my life. I know. It'll screw them up. Nobody will ever learn this thing easily. I mean, what were they thinking? Why would you do something like that when you're going to form a language? Why make it so tough for people? What's the point of that? What about the letter X? It makes no sound. The X makes the sound of a Z. We've got a Z. Xylophone shouldn't begin with an X. Should begin with a Z. Xylophone. But there ain't one Z in the whole word. It makes no sense. What is your point? Why are you doing this to us? It's got to be on purpose. It's got to be. Who in their right mind would do something like this? Voluntarily. Some evil, striking person goes out of their way to screw us up. But not us, ladies and gentlemen, not the listeners of this program. We're aware of your little games, and we shall not fall prey to your silliness. I'm out of here. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace. My God, what kind of show is this? What's going on with me today? I don't think I'm usually like this, am I?